Hey everybody, this is Tony with the Stranger Things podcast, and this is a special presentation. Stay tuned.
Mom?
I had a horrible nightmare. Dreamed I went back in time.
Well, safe and sound now, back in good old 1955.
Oh my God, are you telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
The way I see it, if you're gonna build a time machine into a car, why not do it with some style?
Hey, McFly!
This is the big one, the one I've been waiting for all my life.
You're my mom.
Hey everybody, this is Tony with a Stranger Things podcast, and today we're talking about Back to the Future. Initially released July 3rd, 1985, directed by Robert Zemeckis, becoming first publicly known for his romantic comedy Romancing the Stone in 1984. Then in 1988, he directed Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And in 1992, he directed the satirical black comedy Death Becomes Her, and later moved on to more dramatic fare with Forrest Gump in 1994. But Back to the Future was also written by Robert Zemeckis, and like The Goonies, Back to the Future was a huge success at the box office. Also like The Goonies, made on a budget of $19 million with a box office take of $388.8 million. And this was definitely a far bigger success than The Goonies. $1 billion if you adjust it for inflation today. There's no wonder that Back to the Future would spawn two subsequent sequels. Let's jump into a little bit of the cast here. Michael J. Fox, also known as Marty McFly. Christopher Lloyd, also known as Dr. Emmett Brown. Leah Thompson, also known as Lorraine Baines. Crispin Glover, George McFly. Thomas F. Wilson, also known as Biff Tannen. And we have many other characters sown throughout this particular movie. Such a great cast thrown together. And with a combination of all these actors and actresses within the television world and even the movie world, they were tied to things as, no pun intended, Family Ties, Teen Wolf, Taxi, the Addams Family movies, All the Right Moves, Some Kind of Wonderful, What's Eating Gilbert Grape, Masters of the Universe, also known as He-Man, Dick Tracy, and Top Gun. This is one of the most successful movies that came out of the 80s. And it's really a movie I really didn't appreciate until years later. But there are just so many references. And from what I found between Stranger Things and Back to the Future, one of the biggest things I really noticed off the bat was clocks. I mean, was this another Duffer Brothers idea? And just the whole time travel thing, which we really see starting to occur in season 4 of Stranger Things. So I'm thinking they may have tapped a couple of their ideas, because the grandfather clock and just clocks in general all over the place, just one of the first things that you actually see before Marty McFly wakes up at the top of the movie. But we're going to jump into a little bit of that later on. Today's episode is going to be a little bit different than the first episode. So from here on out, the episodes are going to be a bit shorter, so I can really go through a lot of the movies and just really dive into the information and not have a whole bunch of extra commentary, if you will. And of course, clips from the movie and a little bit of the music and a lot of the cultural references between Stranger Things and any of the movies upcoming, starting with Back to the Future. But with all that being said, I'm going to take a brief break here and I'll be right back.
Look at my birthday, for crying out loud. I haven't even been born yet. And look at this picture. It's my brother, my sister, and me. Look at her sweatshirt, Doc. Class of 1984.
Pretty mediocre photographic fakery. They cut off your mother's hair.
I'm telling the truth, Doc. You gotta believe me.
Then tell me, future boy, who's president of the United States in 1985?
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan? The actor? Then who's vice president? Jerry Lewis.
I suppose Jane Wyman is the first lady.
Whoa, wait, Doc.
And Jack Benny is secretary of the treasury.
Doc, you gotta listen to me.
I got enough practical jokes for one evening. Good night, future boy.
No, wait, Doc. Doc, the bruise. The bruise in your head. I know how that happened. You told me the whole story. You were standing on your toilet, and you were hanging a clock, and you fell, and you hit your head on the sink. And that's when he came up with the idea for the flux capacitor, which is what makes time travel possible.
I mean, we get so much information in the first 2 minutes of this movie than most movies usually put out in the first two acts of a movie. I mean, we get the news report, the stolen nukes, the life of Doc Brown himself, Emmett Brown, and we just dive deep into all of the history, and it's done very well. And you know, I really like to say that Stranger Things does this pretty well. Also, they will give you so much information in just either a few glances or a few spoken words of dialogue, and it's really, really telling on the just the writing that's done so well throughout the entire movie itself. I mean, you know, like I said, we got the news report where it's telling us what's going on, and then we go right into Doc Brown's his whole story, and we see the nukes under the table or within Doc's laboratory of sorts, and it's just really well told. And then we get the scene where he's hitching a ride amidst all of the nostalgia. We get Toys R Us, Burger King, and Marty, you know, while he's hitching this ride through town, you know, we're getting all this nostalgia. And there's really, we will be hard pressed to find a time where we think of Burger King as being larger than McDonald's, but during the 80s and very, very early 90s, Burger King was king, no pun intended, and it was just one of the best times where they were doing a lot of promotion for movies, toys, everything, and Burger King did that extremely well. And of course, McDonald's later on, they took this on and really ran with it and became the bigger of the two. And there's also a scene where there's the battle of the bands, that whole sequence, and it's just really wonderful seeing that. And this was, you know, somewhat of a common trope within 80s movies, but I think that it's really done really well. And I'm going to take a brief break and on that thought, and I'll be right back.
Hey, kid, what'd you do, jump ship? What? What's with the life preserver?
I just want to use the phone.
Yeah, it's in the back.
Stand tall.
Flophouse?
Watch it, Goldie.
No, sir. I'm going to make something of myself. I'm going to night school. And one day, I'm going to be somebody.
That's right. He's going to be mayor.
Yeah, I mean, mayor. Now, that's a good idea. I could run for mayor.
A colored mayor. That'll be the day.
You wait and see, Mr. Carruthers. I will be mayor. I'll be the most powerful man in Hill Valley. And I'm going to clean up this town.
Good. You can start by sweeping the floor.
Man, Goldie Wilson, I like the sound of that.
And with all that being said, okay, so product placement, there was product placement galore within this movie. I mean, there was just, I mean, one thing after another. I can't even name all of the different things that I saw and the things that they were possibly trying to promote within this movie. But, you know, it was a movie, you know, in the 80s, and they really played up the whole product placement idea. Now, the mall and the DeLorean at 88 miles per hour, that, you know, of course, this is like the classic scene, and everyone remembers this. And this is really one of the biggest scenes within the movie itself. And I really enjoyed watching just all of this again in retrospect. Now, this may be the greatest, like I said, the greatest product placement movie of all time. There is just, I mean, one thing after another, we were inundated with products placed all over the place. Like I said, whether it was Toys R Us or whether it was Burger King. Burger King was definitely probably a huge sponsor of this movie, looking back and really rewatching a lot of the placement of said items all throughout, that were sewn all throughout this movie. And then there's the librarian, and just it was just a total 80s moment here. The library, and just what that signified and what that told you about the time in which they were living in, and just how things were just so, you know, so much more different than they are now. And then we have Marty the mortician back to 1955. I don't know, there was a lot going on with that, but I'll get back to that in a little bit. So Marty basically touring his town in 1955, him going back and seeing how things maybe possibly could have played out, maybe a bit different, but that was really great, seeing him going through and just really exploring the same town that he's always been in, but he's seeing in a totally different light. There was so much magic within this movie, and when I say magic, not actual magic, but just the way this movie made you feel, and it just definitely had Steven Spielberg's its blueprint sewn all throughout it, and we really get a lot of that, even with the soundtrack itself, which is probably one of the greater soundtracks of the 80s that came out of the 80s. And then there's the scene where Marty is in the cafe, and he is the way he's playing this role. It's really great to see how he embodies the character of Marty McFly. He really becomes him. The way he stands up to the bully, the way he talks to his father, the way he's just doing all these little things, asking for Pepsi Free, which we know that's, you know, sugarless cola. And he really goes into a lot of that, and just the interaction with the diner owner just them going back and forth. That's really great to see, and just the differences just in a few decades and how people interact with each other and just the way they speak to one another. And of course we found out that Marty's dad is a peeping Tom. And this is, it's like, I don't know, this puts a little bit of a creepy light on and in this movie. And there's a lot of questionable things. And of course in the 80s there were a lot of questionable things sown throughout everything. And we'll talk to, we'll talk about Marty and his mom, in a little bit. So, Steve Harrington was absolutely right in Stranger Things 3, where he was saying that that Marty was actually trying to bang his mom, or the, you know, vice versa. I don't know what to think about all of this, and I mean a little bit of incest here going on. It's really, really weird. I don't think people really view it as such, but that's exactly what it was. And now we're looking back, it's like, oh, this was kind of, you know, this was a bit weird. It was just wrong, right? On so many different levels. I mean, there's movies like Big also, and we don't see it like that with Tom Hanks, and I don't know if this was some kind of, you know, inside joke, but now today we wouldn't joke about incest and in someone being a pedophile, which Elizabeth, who played the character, I can't remember her name from Big, but although after she found out that Tom Hanks was a child, that should have been the end of that relationship. And and although, you know, Tom Hanks embodied a grown person, he was still a child mentally, so that should have stopped a lot of what was going on. And I know something like that, you know, because it's make-believe, it's really hard to believe and really fathom, you know, what that would entail and how someone would actually deal with that in real life. But it's like, no, that should have stopped. So like I said, there was definitely some questionable things in the Big movie, and definitely some questionable things as far as incest here. So we get Marty and his mom's family, and we see their relationship with each other and how they deal with one another overall, and that was really interesting to see play out on screen as well. And then Christopher Lloyd as Dr. Brown is just great. He really jumped into that role and put his all into it, as we can see. And it's just, he's just a classic movie character from what I consider one of the greatest eras of movie and movie telling. And just the way he played this slightly manic and somewhat of a unhinged character. He was just so believable in everything that he did and said.
Had a horrible nightmare. Dreamed that I went back in time. It was terrible.
Well, safe and sound now, back in good old 1955.
1955?
My name is Lorraine. Lorraine Bates? Yeah.
But you're so thin.
Just relax, Calvin. You got a big bruise on your head.
Where are my pants?
Over there. On my hope chest. I've never seen purple underwear before, Calvin.
Calvin, why do you keep calling me Calvin?
Well, that is your name, isn't it? Calvin Klein? It's written all over your underwear. Well, I guess they call you Cal, huh?
No, actually, people call me Marty.
Oh. Pleased to meet you, Calvin. Marty. Clyde. Do you mind if I sit here?
No.
Fine.
No, good. Fine. Good.
That's a big bruise you have there.
The rhythmic ceremonial ritual, also known as the school dance or the enchantment under the sea, which is something that Marty's mom talked about earlier in the film, in the first act, going into the first part of the second act. And, you know, we really get a sense of what occurred and how this all happened and how they possibly met. But also at the same time, we're getting Marty trying to get his mom and dad together, and how George McFly is just not really, he doesn't have the, I guess, the balls or whatever to actually go and talk to his mom and get this date set up, because we know that everything really, it hinges on this date, them actually getting together and actually falling in love at that moment. And then there's the car and skateboarding through town, which was, I love the way it was filmed. It was great to see all of the different aspects, and just Biff and Marty having this this rivalry. It's actually more of a rivalry to amongst themselves, but it's really great to see that Michael J. Fox was cast in this way, because he's a smaller guy, but it's really great to see that he's standing up for himself. He's not the one being bullied, and Marty's even actually trying to get his father, George, to stand up for himself and to not be bullied by Biff and all of his buddies. So this was great to see, and it was at a time that a lot of this wasn't really portrayed on screen as much. And then we get Marty's future mom, who drinks and smokes. And then there's the implication of incest, which, like I said, it's just a really weird part of the film itself. But, you know, it was the time in which it was. And I guess it was played up for comedy, you know, kind of like, you know, some comedic beats. But it was just the... really awkward within the movie. And then there's the really serious scene of the near rape scene, and this is really serious, and you know, and it was played up for laughs a little bit, but I can see where they tried to build this in, because George had to come in and confront Biff, and this didn't work out the way it, I guess, it was all thought it would be played out. But I think it was really supposed to be him coming to the rescue of, you know, in a situation that was bad. And then there's the whole where they actually uttered the word spook to the black guys that were playing in the band, and they were basically stereotypically smoking weed, and there was supposed to be this whole funny scene and with that, but it was just, yeah, that part of it hasn't aged as well. Of course, we're supposed to think that these guys are jerks and they're assholes, which of course they are in the film, and okay, so that maybe saved a little bit of it as far as, you know, it not aging well. And then there's George McFly, who, you know, basically gets a knockout of of Biff. And George is just really ecstatic that he actually knocked Biff out at this moment. And then Marty plays rock and roll, and it starts off really well, and he gets too far into it, and he goes too 80s rock and roll big hair band towards the end. And it just does not play well. I guess, like he said, it was just a little bit before their time, as Marty says in the movie itself. But now the special effects in this scene were really great. I mean, considering a lot of what we have gotten over the past few decades as far as movies go, this movie really had some really before time special effects, and I really love the way they just really use them, you know, the special effects sparingly. I'm gonna take a brief break and I'll be right back.
Was mad, but it's also because I was trapped underground in a secret Russian base.
Dustin, you're going way too fast. I can't understand you.
I know that sounds insane, but the Russians have infiltrated Hawkins. The goddamn Russians!
And now they're using it to open the gate.
Dustin, you're breaking up.
And now they're after us, and we don't have a way out of here. So I need you to come and get us. Can Nancy drive?
Dustin, you're cutting out.
Mike?
Dustin,
you hit me? Mike, do you copy? Shit, not now. Please, not now. Mike!
Dustin!
Mike!
What is it?
Do you have any batteries, double A?
Why would I have batteries?
I always carry batteries.
Then what's the problem?
I need 8.
8?
Shit. So I have to go to Plan B?
Plan B? What's Plan B?
That's amazing.
So, like, I wasn't totally focused in there or anything, but I'm pretty sure that mom was trying to bang her son.
Wait, the hot chick was Alex B. Keaton's mom?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
But they're the same age.
Nope, but he went back in time.
Then why is it called Back to the Future?
He has to go back to the future because he's in the past, so the future is actually the present, which is his time.
What?
So there's a plan at the clock to get back to 1985, and this is where everything starts to come together with the movie. And I just really appreciated what they did with this part of the movie, and how they really built up the anticipation, the tension. Just everything really worked well together, and this was really the probably the third or fourth big action sequence within the movie, because there was a lot of dialogue throughout this movie, and I don't think a lot of us really realized how much dialogue heavy this movie really is. And I think that really bodes well for the story and really pushing the story forward and really getting us to care about these characters and what they're going through and what they're feeling. And it was just really well done. And I love the little Dukes of Hazzard side, you know, slide across the front of the DeLorean that Marty does as he's trying to get to the other side. I just, you know, and if you don't know what the Dukes of Hazzard slide across the front hood of the car is, just check that out and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. So I love the alternate ending where all of the roles have pretty much changed. You have Marty McFly, he's pretty much the same, but you have George's role, which is changed, and Biff's role, which is definitely changed. They basically switched roles. So now Biff is in a more submissive role, and George is in a more dominant role. And he seems to be more successful, more serious, less goofy, which there's nothing wrong with being goofy, right? But, you know, I just love the way they switched up all of this. And, like, there was still some implications to the things that Marty did going back to the future. And this, you know, I said at the top, I think, I just... for so many years, I didn't get the reference or just the title of the movie, Back to the Future, because it's just so, I don't know, it was just weird, the title, but I get it. It only took me about 40 years, but, well, not necessarily 40 years, but, you know, it was a few years back I really, really got it. But anyway, that's a little aside there. So I love the way they have the ending is the beginning. Everything that we thought would happen at the end was actually the beginning, and vice versa, and it just switched up a lot of the roles. And I love the way they did this, because this led into the second film. It was almost like a continuation. It almost seemed as if they broke a lot of this up, and I'm just gonna go on to say it with the special effects. The special effects were pretty good for the time. I mean, and some of them were actually could be passable today. You know, I'm not gonna say they're the best special effects, but for the time, they were really, really great. But going back to the beginning, the ending is the beginning. This movie seemed as if it was filmed. First and the second were filmed all together, and that just really, really played well on screen. Well, this has been Tony with a Stranger Things podcast covering Back to the Future, and I hope you guys really enjoyed this this episode. And the episodes are going to be coming again fast and furious. So I'll see you guys in the Upside Down.
In the future, we become assholes or something?
No, Marty. Both you and Jennifer turn out fine. It's your kids, Marty. Something's got to be done about your kids.
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads? Well, we're going. We don't need roads. We'll be right back.
Yes.